All right, everybody out there on the line with us, we have Peter King from Monday Morning Quarterback on SI.com. Peter, how are you? You're in the war room.
Hey, happy to be here, guys. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Wonderful.
Glad to have you, first of all. Look, we'll jump right into it because we have a few NFL topics that we want to talk about. We have a huge following down in the Washington, D.C. area. So let's talk a little bit about the relationship between RG3 and his coach, Jay Gruden. Now, I'm sure, you know, everybody's aware of the comments that Jay Gruden made kind of critiquing his quarterback after last Sunday's game. When you hear comments like that, because personally, I don't know if I've heard, you know, too many coaches be that critical in public of their quarterback. Does that tell you anything about the future of RG3? Do you think he'll be the long-term answer in Washington?
Well, I think that of all the teams that are out of the playoff chase right now in the NFL, there's a bunch of them who have questions. You know, the Giants about whether Tom Coughlin will come back and Jerry Reese as general manager. You know, so there's a lot of teams that have questions going down the stretch. But to me, I think Washington's issue is very big because they don't know right now. I don't think they can know right now whether they're going to exercise Robert Griffin III's option for 2016, which they must do this offseason. So the next six games, I think, are of vital importance. How he plays, how he develops in Jay Gruden's offense. You know, the administration in Washington has already given Robert Griffin III the benefit of the doubt over one coaching staff, right? Mike Shanahan's. And so I doubt that they're going to be so quick, even despite this bad season, they aren't going to be so quick to get rid of Jay Gruden, because at some point you've got to look at the quarterback and you've got to say, quarterback has got to start playing well. And so I think that is why these last six games of the season are very important. The team must decide by May 3rd if they're going to exercise Griffin's option of $18 million in 2016. And so right now, you know, you've got to think that there'd be some questions and some issues about whether they want to exercise that option. I would think that they're going to exercise the option, but they can't feel real good about it now, just the way that Griffin has been playing, especially since coming back the last 2 weeks.
I kind of think with RG3 that there's not much gray area. I think they either need him to play awful or they need him to play really good, because that makes their decision easier. I think if he plays somewhere in the middle, then I think they'll be just as confused as ever about what they want to do in that situation.
I agree. I mean, I think it's a really tough decision. Yeah. Now, this isn't to say that if they don't exercise the option that he's finished there, that isn't so. I mean, they could always re-enter talks with him, you know, after next season. But what are you saying to your starting quarterback if you don't put enough faith in him, you know, to say you're our guy after this season? I think it would be a pretty startling development if they did not exercise the option. So anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, Peter, this is B. Austin, man. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Really glad to have you here. Keeping with the topic of quarterbacks, Ryan Hoyer versus Johnny Football. Hoyer versus Manziel, who do you get rid of in Cleveland, especially with the success Cleveland is experiencing under Hoyer? What are your thoughts on that situation?
Well, that's one of the reasons why, I mean, another one of the reasons why it's good that you can play the full 16 games, because I don't know, if I were Ray Farmer, the Browns general manager, I would not have enough information right now to make my decision about, you know, about who my quarterback should be in 2015. Hoyer, obviously, is going to be a free agent at the end of this season. He basically, it's no coincidence that he has Joe Flacco's agent, Joe Linta. And Joe Linta was very much in favor of Joe Flacco going for the gusto a couple of years ago and playing it out to the end of the year. And it turned out to be smart because Flacco became, at least temporarily, the highest paid quarterback in football. Now, Hoyer is not going to end up anywhere near that, no matter what happens the last six games of the year. But I think the only way you truly can know whether Hoyer is going to be your guy and whether you're going to commit decent starter money to him is by watching him down the stretch. He's had a good year so far, not a great year, and I think it'd be difficult if you had to commit right now to say how much money you'd pay him. And I think the other issue is when you pick Johnny Manziel, you really didn't know with absolute certainty whether he was going to be a great player for your team. You had hopes, and you liked what you saw at Texas A&M, but you weren't sure. So can you imagine the Browns, who've been looking for a quarterback for the last 15 years, let Brian Hoyer go, and then Johnny Manziel basically comes in and doesn't play well, and they're watching Brian Hoyer play great somewhere else or play very well somewhere else, and then the Browns have to go out again in 2016 or 17 and draft another quarterback high. It would be the continuation of the tortured existence that the Browns have had since they returned to the NFL in 1999.
Yeah, that would be tough.
That's a great point, but I guess my question would be, from a financial standpoint, the general manager's fiscal responsibility to the team, what does it cost to keep Manziel around, but then also have such an expensive insurance policy in Hoyer? You know, I don't know, but the salary cap ramifications have to be pretty interesting there.
Well, I think if you're going to sign Brian Hoyer back to the team, I think Brian Hoyer somewhere next year, I mean, unless he plays very poorly down the stretch, somewhere next year is probably going to be a $10 million, $12 million a year quarterback. So that's where I think the discussion with him is going to have to start. And again, unless he plays poorly down the stretch. But if you look at him, you look at Mark Sanchez, you look at Jake Locker, those are probably going to be the three guys entering this off season who you would say, I mean, those guys would have some interest out on the market. And none of them as a franchise quarterback, but they'd certainly have some interest because I think they've all had some success as starters, some more than others. And there will be four or five teams either in the draft or in free agency looking for a quarterback to come in and compete to start right away next year.
Right, right. Well, that is a perfect segue back to the NFC East. Full disclosure here, you are on the line with two Philadelphia Eagles fans. So Foles versus the rest of the world. As I'm sure you're aware, there are many in Philadelphia who are unduly calling for the Foles era to end prematurely. But what are the Eagles going to do? Are they going to keep Foles? Are you going with Mark Dirty Sanchez? Are you going back to the draft and maybe look at somebody like Mariota? You know, what do you feel the
well, there's no way they're going to have a chance to get Mariota unless they engineer some incredible trade, which hard for me to imagine, especially with some quarterback needy teams like the Jets at the top. Hard for me to imagine somebody trading down, because you know, look at where the Eagles are going to finish. I mean, the Eagles are going to have I don't know, whatever, the 23rd draft pick or something like that. Who knows what it'll be. But in order to move up and to get Mariota, I think it would take a total ransom. It would take an RG3-type deal of a couple of years ago. So I doubt that'll happen. But having said that, I wouldn't if I were an Eagles fan, I would not be all that concerned with the quarterback position. And you're going to say, what do you mean? Chip Kelly's got to have a really good quarterback. Well, the way I look at it is Chip Kelly can build a quarterback and will build a quarterback. He will find a quarterback out there who will play well enough in his system to win games. I just have a lot of faith in the way he teaches the position, he teaches the offense, and he coaches quarterbacks. So I think what happens in 2015 is that they bring Foles back, and let's see how Sanchez plays down the stretch. They may go and try to sign Sanchez if he plays well and create competition coming into camp. I know this. Mark Sanchez loves being in Philadelphia, and he loves playing for Chip Kelly. So I could definitely see him not wanting to take a leap to some new team in free agency, but rather just stay in Philadelphia with a coach and in a system that he really, really likes. That's just my gut feeling there. Now, one other thing about Foles, obviously, this has not been a great year. This was not a great year for Foles, anything like last year. But last year, you have to admit that it was almost like a fairy tale with the guy. And there's no way he's going to be that good.
Absolutely.
Over the long term. So to me, I think that it's more realistic to say Foles versus somebody in a quarterback competition next spring and summer.
Yeah, I think that's what fans
funny,
have.
Peter, because I'm actually a Foles believer. I actually see enough in him to say I'd like to see a larger game sampling, maybe 30, 32 games of him starting from now before I make a full decision on him, because I see a lot to like in Nick Foles. And I think as he learns the game and he grows as a quarterback, I think this is just a sophomore slump for him. So I'd like to see him under center for another year or two and see what that does to the learning curve.
I think it's smart to do because, again, Nick Foles is a third-round pick. He was obviously no lock. I said this to somebody this week about Zach Mettenberger. You can't make a decision on Zach Mettenberger based on what you see in half a season for a bad team with a shaky offensive line. That's ridiculous.
Right.
What Zach Mettenberger can do for the Tennessee Titans, in my opinion, is give them enough cause to say, we want to bring Zach Mettenberger back in 2015 to compete for our starting quarterback job. And it's really the same thing with Nick Foles. If I'm Foles, in my opinion anyway, there's no way that I believe that I've done enough to walk into 2015 with a guaranteed starting job. He's done enough to walk into 2015 to compete on equal footing with somebody for a starting job. And that's what I bet Chip Kelly will do.
Sure, sure. For the satiation of Devin and I, we're two huge Peyton Manning and Tom Brady fans, and we know that you have a unique relationship with both. We had the pleasure of being there in Philadelphia at the Temple Sports Journalism Seminar where you were the keynote speaker. The advice that you gave us was making sure that as a journalist, you're creating relationships with guys such as a Manning and a Brady, if you have that type of access, or whoever it is that you have that access to. I guess knowing Manning and Brady pretty well, can you kind of give us a comparison and contrast between the two playing styles, personality? What makes them great? What makes them similar? What makes them different? Who is better?
I think what makes them similar is that in their own ways, which is different, in their own ways, they're just extremely intense competitors. Darrell Revis said last week about Tom Brady that I've seen a lot of competitors in my time, but none match him. And I think you'd probably find people who would say the same thing about Peyton Manning. So I think at the end of the day, you need to really despise losing to be a great quarterback. You need to have that that inside you. And I think both those guys have it. I think their approach really is different. I think Manning is a little bit of a micromanager where he really wants to have a lot of say about what they do with the team. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Manning was in John Elway's ear and saying, hey, let's go try to get Richie Incognito. It wouldn't surprise me at all, and I don't know that it happened, but that's the kind of thing that I believe that Peyton Manning is very big on. It's not in a, let me tell you how to do your job, but it's, hey, John, you really should look into Richie Incognito or whoever. You know, if he sees somebody on the street, he'll ask him, have you looked into this guy? Do you know much about this guy? Whereas Tom Brady is one of these guys who, you know, a lot of people criticized him because he didn't stick up for Wes Welker and tell the organization, hey, you got to sign Welker a couple of years ago. He just doesn't do that. He views his job the way Belichick always uses his mantra around that team. Hey, just do your job and we'll be fine. And that's really, I think, what Brady believes is the way he should operate. So they're different in that regard, but I think they're similar once they get on the field and how they operate their offense, how they operate their team. Probably the one big playing difference, I think, is that I think Manning can pretty much call whatever he wants on the field when he gets out there. Brady, once Josh McDaniels gives him a play in his helmet, he's got to have a pretty good reason to change it. He can't go changing it flippantly. So I think those are probably some of the changes, some of the differences and similarities.
Cool. All right. Now, Peter, let's talk a little bit about everything that's happened off the field this season in the NFL. There's a lot of sensational off-the-field stories, you know, Ray Rice, Adrian Peterson. Now, on the heels of this latest penalty, punishment, if you will, for Adrian Peterson, he's going to sit out the rest of the season, and he still has to apply for reinstatement, I believe, in 2015. What are your thoughts on how the NFL has handled the rash of off-field issues? Are you okay with Roger Goodell, you know, being the person who levies the punishment, who also sees the appeal? Are you okay with this whole process?
I think what should happen, and my guess is that sometime in the next couple of months, Goodell is going to cede authority and is going to figure out some other way to handle discipline in the league. That's my feeling, because I think it's too much of a quagmire for him, too much of a quagmire that really prevents him from doing the things that really can grow the league, the more important things. As far as the punishment on Adrian Peterson, you know, I think the NFL in an ideal world really would like to have seen Adrian Peterson just miss the whole year because of his court case. Because they knew whenever Peterson came back, they were going to have to deal with some form of discipline with him. And my belief is that because he had already missed 9 games on that commissioner's exempt list, that you can't just say, well, he got paid for him, so it's like an administrative leave. If a teacher is, you know, if a teacher has a challenge from somebody and is taken out of the classroom and the teacher is paid, well, that's fair. The difference, I think, in football and in sports is that most of these guys, anyway, are already independently wealthy. The most important thing to them, and I think to Adrian Peterson, I mean, I talked to him at training camp this year, Adrian Peterson wants to break Emmitt Smith's rushing record. Now, it's a long shot that he's going to do that, but he wants to break his rushing record. So he's basically going to have a season, even though through much fault of his own, he's going to have a season taken away from him in trying to do that. And so that's why, to me, I think had the league given him a game or two after his nine games, a game or two unpaid suspension, that would have seemed fair to me. But the fact is that, you know, I just think six games right now after he's missed nine is too much.
Yeah, so basically, if you know, since he's already done nine, maybe a big fine just to, you know, even it out, level it
off. Well, you're limited on the amount of money you can fine a player by the collective bargaining agreement. But if you gave him, you know, I'm trying to remember the figure, it's $691,000 per game. So if you sat him for two games, you'd basically be fining him $1.4 million. So that seemed to me fair, you know, to make him sit two games, which when you think about it, Adrian Peterson hasn't had pads on. As of this Sunday, he will not have had a shoulder pad on for 75 days. How could you expect him to come right in and play anyway? So, you know, if you gave him two weeks, that he'd be able to get back and get into some limited form of football shape, then he could play the last four games of the year. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Wow.
Peter, we've seen that the DEA has taken an interest, and we know what it's about. It's more than likely painkillers. That's conjecture on my part, but, you know, we know it's probably painkillers. Why do you see the sudden interest in the NFL by the DEA? What do you think that is?
Well, I think they've had this interest for some time and just now have acted on it. Why it was last week, I don't know. But I do think that there's more and more scrutiny on the NFL because it has become such a gigantic part of our culture. More and more scrutiny on professional sports in general. You've seen the steroid investigation, first in, out on the West Coast, and now closer to home, closer to Miami with Tony Bosch. But I think you're just seeing an increase in attention and interest by the federal government in what has become a very, very lucrative business. And that's what I thought when I saw that on Sunday.
Yeah, it was strange to me as well. But let's turn gears. Let's wrap it all with this bow here, because we talked about a bunch of NFL topics. But let's talk a little bit before we get out of here about the future of the NFL. We all know with the new data and the information on concussions, you know, long-term head injuries, the rule changes that are a result of the head injuries, the lawsuits, et cetera. How much longer do you think that this game could possibly last? Like, is there going to be an NFL 20 years down the road?
I think there will be. I think, it's a difficult question. If you were to ask me, is the NFL still going to be around in 50 years? That is a really good question. But if you say 20 years, I think it's going to take a longer period of time than that to prove that basically the game is so damaging that it shouldn't exist. I think of just two things about this that, you know, the big discussion this week about whether, you know, there's been enough money set aside to pay for all of the long-term health and concussion settlements that they're going to have to make with former players. I think the one thing that people are not looking into with this is that, you know, let's say you have an NFL player who played for 3 or 4 years and has some severe post-concussion trauma, after he retires. Well, I mean, the question becomes, should you blame the NFL for all of that? What about what contribution did his 4 years of college football and 4 years of high school football and maybe 3 years of football before that? It's I guess, probable or possible at least that the majority of damage was done by pro football. But I think, going back to your question, I think what has to happen, particularly what has to happen with families in this country, is that they need to feel good about the safety of the equipment, about the fact that they can send their boys, and in some cases girls, out to play football and know that they're not going to come back, you know, concussed, and they're not going to come back really hurt. That is the biggest issue as far as I'm concerned right now. You have to make sure that the farm system in football, that kids can play football and parents can send the kids to play football and still feel good about it. And I think that is the biggest challenge confronting the NFL right now. And that's something that I think the league really needs to redouble its efforts to make sure that they pay attention to in the next, you know, couple of decades.
Yeah, I fully understand what you're saying because I love the game. I grew up playing the game, but I have a 3-year-old son right now, and I'm not too sure that I'm going to allow him to play football after everything I'm
doing. Yeah, you're talented.
I thought it was amazing, not amazing, but very interesting. At the MMQB this week, one of our reporters, Emily Kaplan, did a long Q&A with Steve Gleason. Obviously, your listeners know that Steve Gleason has ALS and is very seriously ill. And he had always shied away from the question of his son, Rivers, and whether Rivers would play football. And Rivers, I think, is about 3 years old now. And so Steve finally said that, you know, he's going to encourage him not to. And until they can be assured that head trauma is better policed, that, you know, he doesn't want his son to play football. And so, I mean, you've got somebody like Steve Gleason who really has become a great ambassador to all aspects of football. And, you know, he's worried about it too. So I just think that that's an issue, and the NFL knows it. That's an issue that the NFL needs to be extremely concerned with in the next couple of decades.
Yep, I'm definitely concerned. But, Peter, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. Before we get you out of here, you can let our listeners know how they can find the MMQB. And
just go to the MMQB.com, and you can read me Monday, Tuesday, Friday, other days, and Greg Bedard, Jenny Varentis, Robert Klemko, Emily Kaplan, and some of our other good columnists, trying to be a little bit writing about some of the more unusual things in the NFL and in pro football. So visit it early and often. We'd appreciate it.
All right. We will make sure that
it's a great read to our listeners.
Yes. All right. Well, Peter, well, again, thanks for your time. We really appreciate it. Great to talk with you again.
All right, man. Good luck to you.
All right.
Thank you. We'll have you back.